Yeah. Well, look, everyone's got a renovation going on in their life somewhere. But today it's clear you've got one going on in your kitchen. You know, kitchen renovation's a lot like org design.
Yes. And a lot of decisions to make.
Yeah. Musical chairs.
Yeah. Sometimes you just want to gutter it all and just start all over. I feel like people need to learn that with positions. I had one company I worked with and I was like, why are they in the exact their span of control is four people? And I don't understand. And they're like, we just want to give them opportunity to be in the exec. It's like musical chairs. So if you want John's chair that is out there, standing on the table.
Why is that chair?
There's always been a chair on the table.
It's how we've always done it.
It's like you come in and you're like, why is that on the table? Like, oh, don't notice that. We all kind of just accept it.
That's John's chair. We don't question John's chair. Well, look, hopefully today we give the listeners something that they can listen to and upskill in org design. Yeah. When thinking about org design, what is it that you think that everyday leaders that you talk to need to know about org design? If they could just forget all the detail and all the consulting jargon and stuff like that, what is it every leader can do to improve how they think about their organization structure?
Yeah, so I always start with what are you trying to deliver? So what's your business model or what's your why? So your op model or your business thing. And are you set up in terms of your organization to deliver that the least friction? I call this strategic people management, which is why it doesn't sit under pure HR, but need the leadership involved in it because it's how you perform day to day. So am I able to set up and deliver on what I need to do? And is my organization, are they clear on what they need to do? Is there least friction? Is escalations easy? Are people growing the way they're meant to be growing? So that's kind of how I see it is. I see org design as strategic people management.
I've got a question there. We hear a lot from people in industry about their operating model, and we hear that a lot talked about. You talked a little bit about the connection between strategy and how people are structured in the organization. What are the components of an operating model that you think about? So we're sitting together today, and Amy was like, hey, I've got these 1,000 people that now report to me. I've just taken this new role. How does she think through what needs to be in an operating model? Is it a business plan? Is it just a strategy document? How does it differ from all those other tools that we see used by executive teams and leaders in business?
So I kind of ask myself, what is the focus of the bigger picture of the business? And then what is our strategic objectives of the group that I look after? How we all set up for success to deliver against those goals, what functions are important or who do we interconnect with the most to be successful, and what services, things that do we manage that centralize versus things that are decentralized. We need to connect in with head office, depends on the size of the org, depends if it's international, depends if it's local. What do we need to get everyone's remit and support with versus what do we manage and run? So that's literally just how are you operating as a business? And then I like to go into details of like, what's your people structure? What's your reporting? So the elements of the business model and just want to get clarity. Because the worst is what people spend time on is like, who does what, especially when you're big. You just can't really afford that because you're spending all this money on wages. This is the difference between a small organization, which can be so much more nimble. You can communicate things easier. You can escalate things easier. But when you're going through that 1,000 plus, you just can't afford to. I started one meeting one time when I was in a company and I said, this meeting, if we look at hourly rate of everyone, is costing us like $50,000. If I just looked at pure hourly rate. And they were like, when I said, yeah, when you quantify everyone's time and how much we waste because no one's really clear on what we're trying to deliver, it's like you can spend your time doing it more in an effective way. So I think that's the thing that I look at.
You've mentioned business model, mentioned operating model. I feel like a few things I heard you mentioned operating model, just wanted to double check we got them all. I heard you mention things like location, centralization, decentralization.
Yeah.
What are some other things that I thought about in the op model?
So for op model, I look at your people, culture, process, things like that. I also look at how you do your reporting and governance. I also look at how you do your financials and things like that. I also look at if there's any matrices, which is a complex concept, but it's like who is connected to who. So who reports to you? Who is your line management? But who's the person that looks out for your success? Or who else do you need to report on what you do that impacts them as well? So I always like to know those kind of bits in an operating model as well. So I love role chartering for that. So how does this role fit into the wider business? How can the wider business support it to succeed? And what does this role need to succeed against all of it? So it's kind of like the cog in the machine kind of thing.
And how do you think an org structure plays into an operating model?
Your operating model is, what are you trying to do? So always kind of see that as like your internal DNA. That's how I visually think about it. And then your org structure is your arms and legs. So it's like, what are you as a person? What are you trying to deliver? And then how are you delivering it? So I always see org design as the, so what functions you have to deliver on what you're trying to create, to who is reporting to who, how is P&L organized, because that all falls under it as well. These are the things that I see, like, what are your arms and legs? Are they efficient? Do you have 55 arms, you know, like 12 chairs that are on top?
When you only need four.
Yeah, you just need four. Like, you don't need 55. But there's just legacy ways of working, right?
We all want our own arms, right? We all want our own arms.
We all want to be the leadership. We all want to connect in with the founder. We don't want to lose that, because that's what we started in the beginning. But the founder's not being able to spend any time to work on the business. They're too caught up with everyone day-to-day wanting a piece of them. So even looking at things like that, like sometimes your span of control, which is who reports to you, can get so large that it is not constructive to the things that you need to deliver on. And so I think those regular checks are quite important, because we just get into BAU mode so much that there's so much we don't see. I use it even in my personal life. When my friend came over, she looked at my place and she's like, why is it organized like that? I was like, I don't know. She just moved one thing and I was like, oh, it's so much better. That's like the thing of having an objective eye and working with people who really know org design well, kind of like connecting the dots and choosing puzzle pieces, going like, if your customer operates like this, just say your customer journey, you're like, okay, traditionally you connected with finance and did this, but actually 2 years ago, you got a brand new system which completely shifted how you work. And actually you don't really need to interact with these many six touch points. You probably just need two, but you haven't updated the way that you and your customer. So that will shift how you do org setup. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I think the customer journey is a really interesting interaction or rationalization against the op model. I'm really glad you mentioned that. Question I've got with you on that, and I hear this from a lot of people when I'm speaking to them about how they're looking at their organization design, particularly people that are not super experienced in org design background, where they're looking and there's just so much detail. When they had a team of 25, then the roles and responsibilities, and they're looking at that minutia detail of every single role or every single position, every seat that someone sits in, every hat that they're wearing. And then they zoom out and become responsible for 300 or 400 people or 3,000 or 4,000 people. The hat's the one person's wearing, the responsibilities that one person carries. And it's really hard to bring the optics back up to a top level. Do you think that the operating model provides not only a great top-down way to look at your organization, but also guide rails as different managers and team members are building across the organization that they can rationalize back to the types of things you talked about, like how they're financially reporting and the way that their customer journey works through the business?
Yeah, I'm a really, really big fan of always going back to the why, because then I find that people can be more nimble and understanding when you shift things, when you know your why. So my approach to org design, and I've got elements from Boston Consulting Group, so that's kind of how I fell into it, was a specialist in org design there. But I really loved a bit of their framework, but I added on more stuff as well. So the why of how you even approach org design, like I would do this if I was in a brand new function, or given assigned this group, and I would say, okay, what is the why, strategic objectives, vision of the company? What is our competitive advantage? So I'd really screen back of the why, because then you can kind of look at things more objectively. So then I go, what's our competitive advantage? What are our key issues and pain points? What's the market trending towards? I always think that's really important, because then you get out of your own head. As we're seeing, AI automation is becoming a really big thing, even to the point where people like my mom are saying for me to use AI automation and ChatGPT to help me prepare for things. And I said, Mom, I still need to use my expertise. It's becoming more mainstream, like the Queensland government's getting their own version, which is pretty cool. And so I look at market trends, and that's impacting how jobs are done, right? So I would always go back to the why, and I look at those four things. And then I go, how do I develop org design effectively? So structure is one part. So it's like who reports to who, so the hierarchy. But then I look at roles and responsibility, who does what, who's accountable for what. And then I also look at the talent, so who fills the roles and who's responsible for what. Because sometimes I think it's very human to, I've got given this group, and then I associate Bob as operation instead of actually looking at, we have this role of operations. Now, what is the talent that you bring? What's your capability? What do you bring? What do you care about? What can we cross-learn? What can we do with you? So actually seeing the position and then seeing the person and then going, is that aligned? Because we haven't had changes and review things for a while. And if they're suited somewhere else, this is where you have your talent succession planning. I worked with this company and they said they had two customer people that they made into engineers. And I just wish that when you're looking at your company and your org design and your talent and your people, that sometimes that we're able to delineate between the people and the positions. And I think that's really, really important, especially if you get given a team, because there's a lot of assumptions we make. So who fill the roles? What are their responsibilities with the talent? What are their capabilities? What are their drivers? What do they want to do? And then I look at also when I'm doing org redesign is the tools and the enablers. So what's your processes? What's the tools that support you to deliver in your operations? So your performance management, your tech stack, your what are your everyday things that you use to connect with other people in the team? And that's how I kind of see org design holistically. And then how I would change things is the structural design, the boxes. Is the leadership aligned on what this function is meant to do? And do we have the proper change management and support to transition people as we need? I think the biggest thing that people always want is clarity. I think that's the thing that really screws up people the most is like, I just don't know. And when you tell people we're still trying to figure it out, it's probably around this thing. People are pretty understanding when you give a timeline and go, look, we're just shifting. I think merger and acquisition is probably one of the best examples. We're just trying to figure it out, but we've got you in ABCD. People are pretty good. It's when it's like, I don't want to address it. It's just too hard. It's a bit awkward. We don't know. And we'll look a bit stupid. This is where people are starting to make up roles. This is where people get the bad apples because they get scared of their security, lose their jobs. They might, like, we don't know. Or are they shifting us into a team as they're offshoring? And that's what causes a lot of stress and anxiety. When you're pretty good about, we're doing this shift, we're looking at this, we're going to try and see you as a person versus the positions we have. That's where people are pretty understanding.
That's really cool. You touched on when things go wrong. We obviously want to respect the privacy of people and companies that you work with. But tell us about the kinds of things that you've seen going into companies that just are screaming at you, we've got an org design problem here, either by the fact that things have changed internally and externally over time and the structure has not changed, or there was just not the effort, time and care put into the org structure and it kind of happened. I don't know if this is going to translate internationally, but the arse about, this is such an Australian saying, I'm sorry, everyone internationally, it essentially happened by accident. Like, oh yeah, that's the structure we had by accident rather than being intentional.
Mergers and acquisitions, obviously, is a really, really good time to look at a structure, but it kind of gets listed at this kind of HR, which is nothing against HR, this side thing that we're just going to keep going and not looking at it. It particularly gets highlighted when there is a big merger and people are looking at who do we currently have in our remit and why haven't we changed that? Why do we have contractors for that? Why hasn't anyone updated this? And one of my favorite ways of looking at org designs, so in the BCG days, I worked with a particular company and we used the tool Org Builder, where you could identify from data the layers and how many people. It took me a while to understand it, read the data, but it's like how many layers are in an org and then how many people sit across those layers. So your ideal is meant to be a pyramid. Most down the bottom, they're the doers. And then these are the people that are role modeling and leading. But the doers, what I found in a few that we did is that you end up with diamonds. So you end up with people here, then they get the big middle bit. Then you have all these people that are reporting. And so you can see the bottlenecks that come through and you go, this is not a really effective way to work as a company because the most junior person is trying to get through up through the top, but we have to do management this way. You know, we get tenured and we get based on promotion this way, and we can't take that away from them. And you go, well, this is not the most efficient way of working. I had someone that said to me, well, we want to be a culture where people talk to each other and where we are agile and stuff like that. And I said, well, I can't do that unless the most junior person is able to have a voice. And do they have a voice? And this person was like, and I was like, I can't change anything. I can help you cut costs. And I can see this is probably not the most effective way of working. Like, what are these people doing? Well, what is this kind of group? But if you want real cultural change and you want to shift how you operate as a business, you need less layers. But that's only if people are willing to not have certain titles, which, you know, is hard, especially in more traditional companies where that is their identity and that is how the country operates. So I've seen things like that. I think it's just such a good exercise to really go, what does my company look like in terms of layer one, how many people sit there? So CEO normally, what's in my ELT, what's it behind that, and actually see the shape. Because when you take an objective view and see the shape and see how many people are individual contributors and how many people are managers across different things, we would also do it with pay. And it was actually really interesting that we would find the nuances that we would find across. I don't know if that helped, but it was a very interesting thing as you start with just the layer and just from a data point of view, instead of understanding the context. And then you can ask questions because it's so much easier to have a conversation based on the data points and then go, okay, help me understand what is this function? Because you could go down to functions, right? And you can see the different way that they're shaped in functions. And you're like, why? Help me understand why. And it's a way different discussion to then just chatting, oh, how are you set up in ops? And then they're like, blah, 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 blah. But that's just what they know. So there's nothing against it. But when you have a data point like that goes, why are you like this? Why is it like 3 people here, 4 there, and like 12 to 18 here, and then like 2 here? It doesn't make sense. They're kind of the discussions I love to have.
So you go in and start those discussions inside of an organization. What are your tips for leaders who are just concerned about how to even have those? You know, you talk about job title, like everyone's got job title promotions. So even title might not match pay. And you're looking at an organization, you're having these discussions and leaders don't want to have the honest or hard conversations. How do you set them up for success to have hard conversations where things do not match, structure does not match strategy anymore for whatever reason? How are you working that through with leaders to help them communicate?
Yeah, it's a really tough one. So one of the things that I do is the 5 hindrances to scaling. And it's something that I do with accelerators and VCs and with companies. And we actually really take a step back and then go, these are the 5 hindrances to scaling. So 5 things that I see hold back a company to scale as fast as they might like to. So the first one is focus, for obvious reasons, very important, knowing what your why is, what problem you're solving. The second one is family. So the concept of family means that you can have an indispensable workforce, which is not always healthy. So I say, like, you guys are a high-performing sports team. Everyone has a role to play. Coaches make calls when people are not delivering on what they're meant to, because it actually brings down the whole team. Financials. Ability to take on feedback, that's a really big one. So how coachable are you? How much are you surrounding yourself with people with diverse opinions? And the last one is a funnel. So how easy it from your zero to cash, the moment you see it to the moment you can sign up or purchase it. Now I go back to the family one, and the question I ask is, do you have the right co-captains on your team to deliver where you want to go? So let's go back to their focus, and I go, we really need to delineate between people and position. And so I go through the 5 of that, and then they self-assess where they're at. And then I go, what you have from your 0 to 1 can be very different to what you need as you grow. Do you have the right people with the right capabilities and how to manage people, how to make tough calls? Do you want to be the one that's making the tough calls? I had a really young person, I was like 25, that said to me, I don't know if I should be CEO anymore because I've outgrown. No, my capability is only for certain, but does it look bad that if I step away? And I said, no, like, that's incredible maturity. And we need more people to be self-aware. But the reality is that we're not. We identify so much of ourselves with work and with the community that we create with our work. And we don't talk about transition plans enough. We don't talk about what next enough. We don't look at things objectively as what's the business need to be rather than what do we need to be. Does that kind of make sense? So when you make it more about business, the objective, the culture, the anchor points of what you're trying to deliver, you can make more decisions and step back. But it is hard. So I tend to start with the framework there to be what's your hindrance to scaling. And if we look at the family bit and go, do you have the right co-captains in your ship to really get you to your objective? It's a easier way to start a conversation than that. It tends to start from there's a bit of friction, like someone is writing the code, we're wanting different things with our work. We don't know what our end game is. One person spending time doing one thing, but it's not useful for another thing. And then the tension starts. But it's usually when it's quite a lot later, it could be detected a lot earlier if we are able to have those mature conversations, but they're hard. They're really, really hard.
Cool. Well, Venetia, you're helping leaders ask these questions from your base in Sydney, but across Australia, and you've done work in the Middle East. What's the name of your company that you're doing all of this amazing work through?
P3 Studio. So P3 stands for People, Partnerships, Purpose. So the three main things that I love to look at. And I do love org design so much. I mean, thank you. I brought these with me. They're the best.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to use them more in leadership things because it's a really fun activity to do. And I do nerd out on it. And I did read an org design book when I was on holiday just to understand how do people make it work. Really well. It's like the Green Organization book. It's so good.
Yeah, I'm going to ask, what was the book?
Oh, sorry. It's Reinventing Organizations. It is really good. And they talked about like 12 green organizations, which were exemplary work of how people communicate. So there was one example where a leader wants to make a decision. They have to talk to several people in the company to create their business case of why they do what they want to do. There's not like this huge, long process. And then another one is like, if a leader or CEO wants to make a decision, there's like a Slack channel or like an open channel and he'll post his idea, gets instant feedback from everyone. Positive, negative, this, that. And then people are engaged. And if there's any big objectives, they can talk to him. And then he gets stuff done like that. I just think that organizations lose their ability to be agile and make quick decisions because there's too many approval things. And that goes back to trust. That goes back to how you operate. That's that whole, are you able to make mistakes? People do anyway. So it's like, why don't we make mistakes, but we also be more efficient? Reinventing organizations is quite cool. They talked about a lot of amazing ways in which you can operate better, but it does take effort like anything else. But the rewards you get are amazing. You have talent that's screaming on your doorstep, like, please hire me. We get work with the best talent. You get people that work more efficiently, you get people thriving in their best potential. And people is everything in an org. They can make and break them. The right people will be able to pivot things. They'll be able to see things in the future. They'll be also as invested in the success of the org as much as a founder is. And I think that's the ultimate for everyone, right? You only want to do that in places where you have psych safety. You're working with people who are striving to be their best and not people who are complacent, which happens a lot too.
Yeah, that'd be great. We'll put it in the show notes. And we love book suggestions and the authors.
Yes. There's one thing I thought really, really interesting. There was a meeting and they had people who brought their kids into the daycare, like they had daycare downstairs, but during lunch, they'd bring their kids up. And they actually saw a really different side of their manager. And I think that's what COVID did, is it really humanized them. So I think as people, if I look at it in the org design setting, you are a manager. You're not a human being. You are the person I report to, or you're a senior director and blah. And then when you see them with kids, you actually see a very different side and a very human side to them. And they also researched that with dogs. So when you bring a dog into a meeting room, it actually brings a hostility quite a lot. And especially if your dog likes to connect with maybe a coworker you don't like, but you're both patting something you love, that brings community. I just thought it was a really interesting way of, if you humanize the people you work with, not to the point where you're a family, but as same as a sports team, you still need respect, you still need a camaraderie, you still need closeness to operate effectively. These are just some techniques that they use that have been quite effective to create an organization that's quite healthy and functioning and working together.
Yeah, that's a really great point.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the Org Design Podcast. We've been chatting with Venetia Rufford from P3 Studios, with Tim Brewer and myself, co-hosts of the Org Design Podcast. Thanks, Venetia.
Thank you for having me.